Okay, good afternoon, everybody. This is the second episode of the Lumpen Kulturati podcast with me, Carl Javier, and my guest for today is my, is it roommate now? Roommate, office roommate. Mate here in in the UP Faculty Center. Still recording here, same place as I was recording for the first episode with Mike Atienza, so expect the same kind of weird sounds and noises and everything.
Children running around.
People running around. It gets scary here. There was one time when Francis thought that there was a ghost, but it was actually just some kid in costume.
Yeah, from the theater department.
Like, it's weird. You know,
rehearsing in front of my window.
But we're here today to talk about Morning Glories, a series by Nick Spencer and Joe Eisma. Is that right?
Yeah.
And from Morning Glories, I've gone on to read a lot of other Nick Spencer work.
That's true, yeah.
Like some of his Avenger stuff, some of his Secret Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So we see Spencer handling a lot of big superhero work. But
yeah,
Marvel
and Avengers things.
Yeah.
And he is co-writing part. He's co-writing, I think he co-wrote Avengers by Jonathan Hickman for a few issues.
Yeah.
Right.
And also in the Ultimates universe, I think
he did
a fair amount of Ultimates work.
Really,
so. Yeah, so one of these really young or new voices in superhero comics, really strong, interesting stuff. But we get his work from Image, his creator-owned Morning Glories to talk about. So, yeah, my guest is Francis. He is my roommate over here. We both teach again. You may notice this trend where I will be interviewing people who teach at the English department because they're the people who I can drag from the hall and into my office or into our office. And Francis is also the deputy director of the ICW.
Of
the Institute of Creative Writing, the UP Institute of Creative Writing. And I credit Francis as being one of those people who helped me get back into comics because he lent me stuff and gave me files of the New 52.
Oh, yeah, which,
which didn't pan out very well.
Yeah, for me or for you. That was like the biggest mistake of our lives. Made a lot of big mistakes.
I will rank, but since this is a show about loving and not hating, we won't keep talking about the New 52. Talk about Morning Glories. And
yes.
And I found my way to Morning Glories specifically because Francis was raving about it, and I thought, Morning Glories, that's like just a terrible title.
Yeah,
I think it's a crap title.
It is.
I think about Oasis, and for all that I love Oasis, I don't know why. And then Morning Glory, as far as I know, is that like stuff in your eyes when you wake up and it's kind of gunky and stuff. Am I correct?
Something like that. Plus, it was the title of a Harrison Ford movie, a romantic comedy a few years back. So.
Was it now?
Yeah, so.
Yeah,
you know.
So terrible title, but.
Terrible.
Great series. So
yep, it is.
When I got a chance, I started picking these up on the strength of Francis' recommendation. So thought it'd be fun to talk about this series and what makes it something that you should read if you're not reading it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll confine our discussion to season one of the book, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's
we'll
actually kind of.
We'll try. You know, we'll try and.
Is that issue 24 or 25?
I think it was issue 24. Yep, I think it's issue 24. So, you know, people should be good, you know, if you haven't picked up
We'll try and stay spoiler-free. We won't give any of the major...
Plus, you haven't really read anything from season two, so, you know.
Major deaths or anything, but, yeah, the discussion will be season one, and I assume that once season two finishes, we'll both sit down and do another look at it.
It's true.
Based on Francis' copies over here... Season one is 5 TPBs.
No, that just has 4.
Ah, just up to 4.
Okay. Yeah, the fifth one is actually the beginning of season two. So.
Okay. Right. So we've read about the same stuff. So
yeah.
4 TPBs if you want to catch up on this. And again, why do we want to read? Morning Glories. What's the pitch here?
The pitch is that it's set in a boarding school, which, you know, should
say... Another reason why I wouldn't want to read it, right?
It should say, you know, like, every other book right now is set in a boarding school.
With attractive young teenagers.
That's well, true, right.
Of course they're young because so, yeah. they're teenagers. Anyway.
So if you can think of a boarding school story, and then you have crazy teachers, mm-hmm. and then mind torture, mm-hmm. and actual physical torture in them, mm-hmm. and then you have an ongoing mystery. So it's... You know, the
it still sounds like Harry Potter.
Yeah, it does, right? But the way it was sold to me by someone online was it was Lost and Harry Potter combined.
Yeah.
So I looked it up, and you know, the first TPB was really what like, hooked me into yeah. it. And you know, Image has this thing about like selling the first TPB for like less than $10, so it was really, really on the cheap, and you got right. the full Morning Glories experience, and I was hooked after that. So, boarding school, and then plus loss. That's yeah. it. And
that is a pretty accurate description.
Yeah,
though.
And that's the only you know comparison you can make of it. It's like Loss in comic book form.
I think when we say it's like Loss, largely because of the pacing.
Yeah, the pacing and the choice of doing, you know, mysteries and then like seeding events that will happen in the future, in you know like 12 issues before it happens. So you know,
It does follow that J.J. Abrams mystery box concept.
It does. It does.
Right, where you're revealed something, yep. but then. That revelation only leads to a much larger question.
Yeah, and you know, it just like it's more and more. It you know, like it's a puzzle box, right?
Yes,
it becomes
yes.
more and more intricate the way the more you get, the more deeper you get into Morning Glory. So, really is fascinating, and I think that you know anyone who kind of wants this kind who is. Into serialized storytelling well, might you know might want to get in on this writer Nick Spencer promised at least 100 issues worth of stories.
Oh wow. Jeez.
So yeah, so it we're is 100 issues and I guess yeah. So, yeah currently issue 30 so 34 or 35
so he's in the, really playing in the long game.
Yeah, it's a long game, right? So
and one of the ways that that Spencer is obviously doing it is by adding characters and then using these peripheral characters and then making them relevant later on.
Yeah.
Like somewhere in the middle of the teens issues, you get another group. So
yeah,
it's like, again, it's like
it's
Lost.
Like
yeah,
Lost,
the
right?
tail.
It's the tail section.
Yeah, except the whole tail doesn't
die. Yeah. the tail section, the others,
sure.
the Dharma Initiative from the 1970s,
yes.
right? That kind of thing. Yeah, so it really is following that kind of structure. I mean, you begin with a core cast of six, and then you have really
yes,
a
yes.
really strong supporting cast, and then the supporting cast die out. Some of the people in the main cast die off.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're replaced with this group of people in the
yeah, and then you lose track of the
yeah.
original cast
you
because you're running
cast.
With these characters with
yeah.
these new characters.
I mean, in the first season, if my memory serves me correctly, the first six issues are really really eventful. Lots
mm-hmm.
of things
mm-hmm.
happening, but once you get into the third and the fourth. Trade paperback, it's just one long sustained story that actually stretches into the beginning of the second season.
Yeah,
so it
true.
Really is it's something that you know you can't like read now and then drop it and
yeah.
then like pick it up like a month from now and you know just try and catch up on the issue you missed, you know, with the reprint. It's something that you have to, you know, commit to.
Yeah, I can't imagine not reading this in trades because I picked up the first season like
in
its entirety
like, in like one go, right?
And I just went at it,
see,
you know, because I can't imagine having to wait.
Yeah.
Especially because the momentum of some of these stories isn't forward, but it's sideways and it's
That's
peripheral
true.
Momentum.
That's true.
So you don't get to know what happens next.
I know, that's true. And, you know, there was something that, you know, kind of... if I have to pick on something about this the series, it's that, you know, the first season ends where...
Go on, man.
The first season of the series ends, you know... somewhere around the middle of a story that, you know, has already ended in the first season. But it just like, kind of loops it's on its own.
True, true.
Like an Ouroboros, that snake that eats its own tail.
Actually, if we're telling weaknesses, I mean, my problem is that we repeat specific panels.
That's true. Like, if you were buying this comic book monthly...
Yeah, in floppy.
Yeah, you know, there are months like, you know, there are like 5 pages at least that repeat, so...
5 pages that you've already seen in another thing, but they've just been given a new context, which in a TV setting would be fine.
It's like, but then that is kind of, you know...
Like, just seeing the same scene.
I mean, it's not, and it's not even like it's repaneled or seen from another perspective.
Yeah, no,
it's the same panel, right? And just like coming from a different context. But, you know, I think if you're reading it monthly, I think it works because then you're filling in the gap. But then because we are reading it on trade, kind of gets annoying, especially then the issues are back to back.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, I just read this, so. But, you know, that's the limitation of the form, I think. I mean, other than that, it's really involved and really, really, you know, intricately plotted.
And what I get also is the strength that they couldn't do this in TV because you drop your main cast.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
You drop them. You don't even mention them for a number of issues or a number, you know, for a fair amount of time. And then you come back. And you're jumping all over the place. So it works on that level.
Yeah.
I think just for the basics, I know we've gotten into like about 10 minutes of talking about it. We haven't given the basic, because it's so hard to give a basic storyline, there's six kids, right?
Yeah, six kids.
Three guys, three girls.
Yeah, which is Casey, the girls, Casey, Zoe, and Jade.
Yeah, yeah.
The guys, there's June, there's Ike, and there is Hunter.
Yeah.
So what you have there is like, it's an ethnically diverse cast.
Yes.
But
also they are... kind of stereotypes.
Yeah, the stereotypes.
You have like, the rich douchey kid.
Yeah, you have the jock. You have the smart kid.
Yeah.
Then you have the insecure girl, right? And you have the cheerleader.
Yeah.
And you have the math genius.
Yeah.
And they are flown. They're flown in to another state, right?
Yeah.
They get on a limo, and then they pass out, and then when they wake up, they're at the Morning Glories Academy, which.
Yes.
It's
a prestigious school.
Yeah, it's a prestigious school.
And you can only be invited to go to that school.
Yeah, that's true.
And then when you get there...
you can't get out.
You can't ever get out,
you
supposedly.
Can't get out. I mean, was it Jade who called her parents and her parents said that, you know, they don't even have a daughter named Jade. Casey's parents end up in the Morning Glories Academy dungeon.
Yes.
Dead. Right,
torture. Spoilers, guys.
It's the first season, right?
Yeah, it's first few issues that happens though. So
that's actually the first issue.
Yeah, so there are things that happen, like your parents are not gonna be there to save you.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and somewhere along like the second trade paperback, which would be issue 12, we find out that Morning Glories Academy isn't even located outside the real world, but, you know, somewhere else.
Yeah, it's in some slip space kind of.
And you have to get there by, you know, through the use of science, quote unquote.
Yeah, and then there are these giant kind of chambers that will allow you to travel not only through
space
but also time. So it's like the wheel in Lost.
It is the wheel in Lost. It's basically when the Lost comparisons... They are not mistaken, or they are not far off. If you've read the first storyline of the second season, you'll really see how really lost like it's become, in how it's using time travel to affect things in the storyline. So, you know, but yeah, basically as a premise, six school kids, newcomers into the school, and then, you know, they are tortured for reasons that are unknown.
Yeah, right? They don't know, and like the thing is that they all have the same birthday.
Yeah, that's true, right? They have the same birthday. And they have been, I mean, the thing is that they applied, but the truth is that
they were coerced, or forced into it, right?
And they were chosen to be there.
And then you get these little background things where there's actually things in their past that influence them being...
And then you find out, right, that some of them did not apply innocently, they go to this place with a mission in mind, and that you know, they are specifically there because they are out to, you know, to do something.
They they'd be basically the others.
That's true.
Lost. Again, it's really hard to let go of these Lost references.
I know, and you know, Damon Lindelof did do the introduction for the deluxe edition of Morning
Glory. So there's no mistaking that
it really is Lost.
I do think that Lost is an incredibly influential
text. That's true.
Post 2000 text.
Yeah, we don't give it credit enough, I think.
And the melodrama of it, though. I mean, that's the flashbacks and the melodrama and all of this stuff. And where it is able to diverge from Lost is that it portrays these teenage dilemmas and these struggles. And even, you know, it still goes back to these issues of the father, the parents, and rebellion, and teenage rebellion, and trying to figure out who they are in the world.
It really is about that. At least in the first season, right?
Yeah.
Most of the flashbacks do talk about, you know, parental relationships in the same way that Lost is obsessed with its parental relationships.
It's the teen issues of it. It was it Jade though who was the weirdo in school? She was a smart kid, but nobody understood her.
So it really I think the use of the archetype is really smart. Yeah. And then the way these archetypes are like flipped over their heads, you know, just to fuck with the real readers. Like, you're expecting Casey to be because she is the mad genius, you expect her to be really meek, and yet she is trained by her army military father. Right. And you know, you have twins who switch identities.
Yeah.
Which is now confusing because I don't know which is which.
But we won't spoil it, but But also, I think it's the archetypes are effective in that the book really strings you along. It makes you believe, you know, it pulls you one way, makes you think of things in one way. And so when it gives you those reveals, there are those jaw-dropping, you know, what the F reveals that we get from a TV cliffhanger. You know, these end of issue things, which again is why I don't know how I would read this. Not in trades, not in collected form, which is why I'm not getting to season 2 until it's done.
You're gonna wait for like a while there.
Sure, man.
I am just waiting for the trades, and when the trades come out, I read it, you know. But you know, the thing about, you know, Morning Glories is that although it isn't the first comic book series to kind of take advantage of the serialized form.
Yeah.
I think in my mind anyway, it's the first one that kind of, you know, embraces the fact that, you know, that it has a definite ending. And it has a definite end date in the same way that Lost has done it. That, you know, it can throw storylines that it will do 4 years in advance and like get it moving, like in issue one.
It's sowing the seeds.
I mean, if you think of, for example, Sandman, that was a long term,
serialized 75 issues
story.
Yeah.
But
plus all of the side stuff.
Yeah, but you know, the way, if you look at it, the way Gaiman wrote it, you know, each storyline was self-contained enough, and it wasn't until near the end that he was trying to tie things together. But, you know, Morning Glories is really committed to the idea that, you know, he is in it for the long run, and so is the reader. So, you know...
I think it allows for that space in storytelling, yeah. Which is why you have those scenes that you can just revisit, because yeah. He's not in a rush.
Yeah, he's not in a rush. So, for example, the very beginning of the first issue of the series... almost half the page number mm-hmm. is dedicated to a flashback to characters who you won't see until two yes. years later.
Yeah.
Right? So it's only 2 years later when you realize these were the characters that I saw in those first five pages.
Yeah.
And the scene that opens the series where there's this unseen guy reading a piece of paper that reads "For a better tomorrow,"
uh-huh.
that payoff doesn't come until 2.5 years later, yeah. and then you don't even know what that means because it's another context for the series. So it really is embracing the idea that it's a long game, and it's serialized, and that once you get into it, you commit to it. I mean, why The Last Man? You know.
Sure.
It felt like it was plodding, and it had a definite date, but it was just waiting for the date to come, right? This one,
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, having reread, why it does really, have a trajectory.
It does have a trajectory, but then it felt like there were some storylines in it that it could have done with, or. Moments that could have been shortened.
I think there were some storylines yeah. there that could have been maybe side.
Yeah, that's
side
the
stories
thing with it, yeah.
or.
So
stuff
this
like
one
that.
Is
sure.
like, you know, it's intent in what it's doing. It
yeah.
knows the story that it wants to tell, and you know, it's not afraid of, you know, doing what is necessary to tell the story. So you know,
I think with the concept of the sustained narrative.
Mm.
Where Morning Glories comes out really strong is in its incentivizing rereading.
That's true.
Yeah. Right? More than these other... I mean, I will... Yeah, I reread why I'm rereading Sandman now. And I'm not reading it for the intricacies of...
The plot.
The way that the story has yeah. kind of intertwined and meshed and they've created this thing. I mean, those are still... trajectory based
mm-hmm.
but here I can go back and I actually say, oh shoot, so this is what this is now that I understand.
Yeah, see, right.
So it's that it rewards this because when we have time, right, we reread comics that we really like.
Yeah, right.
And I imagine that when season 2 comes out of Morning Glories
mm-hmm.
I will go back, go over season 1,
yeah,
refresh, and then... And so it gives that added enjoyment of the reading. And
yeah.
it's written so sharply that you don't mind rereading it.
Yeah. I mean, if you... I mean, I don't know the your listeners, right? If you look at my office...
We'll post a picture.
Yeah, most of my comic books are, like, in boxes.
Yeah.
Right? But Morning Glories, because I just read volume 5 of the trade
mm-hmm.
paperback... I have all the other trade paperbacks up because I have to refresh myself. I have to go back to the beginning and then continue the story because, you know, just trying to read it cold is nearly impossible.
It's, again, it's like when you watch Lost and you don't want to just go back to a specific season. You want to just do the whole thing.
Yeah.
Francis and I keep repeating this because we keep planning to do a podcast where we just
rewatch the whole of Lost
and talk over
the episodes.
Talk over the episodes of Lost.
I think we're gonna die if we try to do that.
Yeah, because we still haven't gotten our Dharma suits.
Oh.
You know, but this Morning Glories as that text. I don't know if we're doing it a disservice or if we're making it a strong point that it is like Lost, because
yeah,
I know
people.
Because it's very clear, right? In the way that Lost isn't for everybody,
it's
Morning Glories will not be for everybody.
Yeah, it's not. It's not for readers who want like the quick fix.
No, there is no like one shot payoff.
No, there never is any one shot thing.
Actually, there's very rarely a payoff.
Yeah, that's true, right? I mean, the payoff comes in the cliffhanger ending, yes, of each series, and you know, which just drives you forward into more into the story. Even if the forward momentum is actually going sideways or looping, yeah, back on itself.
You get it not out of the okay, this happened, uh-huh, but oh, so that's what this means.
See, yeah.
Whoa, or I've seen that before.
Yeah.
But now I understand what it means.
Yeah, I mean, you see, there's this in season one. There's this scene where somebody disappears, right,
mm-hmm,
and disappears back in time.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the season, you see her emerge from a door,
uh-huh,
and
uh-huh,
you think, yeah, that, yeah, she's just figured out a way to get back.
Yeah.
To get back, and it's just, it's the same person. But you know, the more you read into it, the more you discover, oh, she is the same person, but she's no longer that same, yes, person, right?
So, and I could be wrong, but there are also these things where, in the current timeline, you understand that this is what happens, uh-huh, and this is how this character operates.
Yeah.
And then it reiterates the system.
Uh-huh.
But then when it presents it and you know what the character is supposed to do, suddenly this character does something totally unexpected, yeah, and different. And so it's always throwing you these yeah, curveballs and making you question, all right, if this character has done this, then has this changed everything that I know so far?
Yeah, so that's the thing.
I'm speaking so broadly because I don't want to give a spoiler.
Oh yeah, these characters. Well, yeah, and I'm, yeah, trying not to spoil season two for you so far. So, you know, it kind of is a challenging read. Definitely something you must read. I mean, comic book wise, yeah, great art by Aisma.
People will debate on that.
Really,
one.
Really.
But right. I mean, I've heard people who also were turned off because the covers are so great looking.
Oh yeah, but
the covers look great, and then the internal interior stuff is, yeah, not as. It's not on the same level.
I mean, and you know, when I first read it, there were moments when I, you know, just like could not tell the characters apart sometimes, yeah, because of.
And the facial expressions, yeah, the could facial use expression. A lot, yeah, more work.
But later on, the writing takes that.
Yeah. The writing here is very, very,
yeah,
strong.
No. There's a twist in the plot where the drawing, the way Aisma draws, is taken advantage of, so that, you know, one character changes appearance and looks like she's someone else.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's really, you know, anyway, I like the art I like the interiors.
It's okay. I mean, it didn't turn me off.
Admittedly, though, you know, I really, really love the cover art by, you know, Escuejo. And if you want the Escuejo interiors,
Mind the Gap, we should probably talk about sometime.
Yeah, some other time, right? But, you know, the art is okay. And it does improve the art eventually.
Sure.
But the writing is great. It's really twisty. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's rare that you find a comic book where a creator is given this kind of, you know, just crazy leeway,
yeah,
to do whatever the hell he wants. Like, you know, at this point, you know, you don't even know who the protagonist of the story is, because it's just so mixed up that, you know, the villain is kind of sympathetic now, and then the protagonists, yeah, are, you know, kind of dicks.
Yeah. But as we're wrapping up, I think one of the strengths here is not only does this have this really strong long game, right? This world building and, mm-hmm, this ability to kind of bring all of these different threads together, but it's also very strong with individual character work and the small moments. I really enjoy the small character moments, and I guess it's because I'm a sucker for like high school strife story stuff where you have, you know, these really adolescent amped up emotional conflicts, and it does this so well in the way that it pairs up its different characters.
Yeah, I mean, Spencer's good at like trying to get at those small moments from the characters. But you know, it's great, these small moments, but when he kind of repeats some of the small moments, it loses steam, and he has a tendency to repeat the small moments, which is, you know, like if you remember the third story, the PE, they were going out to the woods to do this wood run thing, and then there was like 3 or 4 pages worth of panel where Hunter hurts Zoe's feelings.
Yeah.
The first time it happened, it was like, ouch, like that's harsh. But then when it's reiterated and shown from the Zoe's point of view, it kind of loses its...
Yeah, but that's also, it's in the wood run that I started getting the sense of these things are getting repetitious.
Yeah.
And I need the forward movement.
Yeah.
And I think that's also, that's how you get antsy about, again, Lost.
Yeah.
Right. This. I want to move forward. I want to see what happens next.
Yeah. And the woodrun doesn't conclude until the final issue of the first storyline of season 2. So it's a really
So it's long. That's maybe.
I mean, if you think about it, the first trade paperback has a lot of things happening.
Yes. So much happens.
So much happens in the first trade paper.
And
first
it's the setup. Sure.
And it's set up, and then. The second issue, the second trade paperback, which is issues 6 to 12, I think, kind of introduces you to the teacher and expands the world. It shows you that Morning Glory's Academy isn't located in the real world.
Yeah.
And then by the time we hit PE, the third trade paperback, and the fourth one, it's full-on storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like the world has been built, you know the players.
Yeah.
Now let's actually tell a story, and it really is a massive story. So,
and then you get stuff added on. I think after during Woodrun, we get the others. We get the other school.
The truants, right? That other thing, and then we actually, I mean, in the beginning of the second season, you go to another high school.
Yeah.
And then you.
Another prep school.
Another prep school, and then you have older versions of some of the characters traveling from the future. And then
and it starts looping in, and it's at that point there that you might lose some of the readers.
That's true, right? And then there's this storyline where there is this storyline that's embedded somewhere in the first season about this scientist doing some work in the future. But you don't really get her, you lose her in the thing, so I'm not sure.
If this is stuff that will hopefully pay off eventually.
I'm sure it will pay off, because they paid off that first page in the first issue.
Yeah, it's a big investment in terms of
time
and
money.
your willingness to go with this story.
No, that's true.
Because it will not yield easily to it. And it's still ongoing.
And I mean I hope Image kind of, you know, like sticks to its guns and let the story.
I hope so too. I mean, I would like to see this go full on and just finish as it's supposed to finish.
Yeah, and I would like to see Nick Spencer's room, because I mean, if he's he's plotting this somewhere.
Yeah,
it has to be a big wall, because this is
big
crazy.
Wall with all the interconnecting threads and all that.
It is crazy now that, you know. But, you know, I am 5 or 8 issues behind, so, you know. So, I'm not even sure if it's the same series that we're talking about right now.
Right,
or like,
because this series is
anyone who's reading it.
Breakneck turns.
Yeah, like, you know. In the span of one issue, the good teacher becomes a bad teacher.
Yeah.
Right. So.
All right. Well, Thanks, Francis. And I'm sure that since we are roommates, I will have you on when I can't get a guest.
Oh, yeah. Give me food or something.
And I'm pretty sure that the audience finds what we're saying interesting enough
to
deal with. And we got all these comic books to post on. Thanks very much. And then thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast. If you haven't heard it yet, we've got another one up where I talked to Mikey Atienza about the science fiction short story Sync, written by Isabel Yap. And we got more episodes upcoming about all kinds of fun stuff. So thank you for listening. I hope you keep listening to the Lumpen Kuldrati podcast. This is Carla Vieira. Thank you.